听力课堂，听 class.com.
Unit 7, Aspects of Education, 1. Part 1, Getting Ready. A. The following words and phrases will appear in this unit. Listen carefully and study the definitions.
1. Extrovert. 2. Tyranny. 3. Plateau. 4. Posh accent. 5. Intelligibility. 6. Figure out. 7. Crossword puzzle. 8. Spoof. 9. Distortion. 10. Mundane.
B. You are going to hear some advice about learning a language. Complete the following paragraphs.
People are delighted if you can speak their language, and they don't care how well you speak it. They are not upset when you make mistakes. I think in order to learn, you mustn't be afraid of making mistakes.
I'm a very shy person, and it's not easy for me to talk to strangers. But you have to force yourself to talk to people. That's what I did, and it really helped me.
I think the best language learners are people with a sense of humor. Try to laugh at your own mistakes, and don't take yourself too seriously. You'll find that other people will be sympathetic when you make mistakes.
I took 2 courses in business studies. I read, studied, listened to lectures, and took notes in English. It was a very good experience for me because I didn't have time to think about the language. I recommend forgetting about the grammar and thinking about the meaning instead.
In my experience, learning a foreign language always involves a lot of time, a lot of boring work, and lots of problems. In short, if you want to learn another language, you have to work hard.
Try to read as much as you can. I think that's the best way to improve your English and to learn more new words. I always try to read something in English every day.
Part 2. Are you a good language learner? A. You are going to hear some advice on how to be a good language learner. While listening for the first time, add more keywords in the notes column. After the second listening, complete the following outline.
The topic I'd like to deal with this morning is what makes a good language learner. This is an internal problem, and one to which there's no real solution. I would, however, like you to think about the situation of learners outside the classroom, because in many ways, it would be true to say that there are more people in the world who speak a foreign language or a second language who didn't learn it in a classroom than there are who did. And I think this awareness of the success of out-of-classroom learning provides us with a key to how in-classroom learning can be successful. Let us look at the characteristics of a good language learner. I think motivation is certainly going to be very high on our list. Obviously, there are different kinds of motivation. There is what we call instrumental motivation. This is the kind of motivation which, in theory, persuades a school pupil to learn a language in order to pass an examination. It's external motivation, something which is imposed on the learner. The opposite of this is integrative motivation, the kind of motivation which gets an immigrant in a country or someone who's married to a speaker of another language to master the tongue much more rapidly than someone learning in a classroom. Arguably, most people possess mixed motivation, although it would appear from research that integrative motivation does give much better results, certainly as far as speed of learning goes. Personality is obviously another major factor to be borne in mind. I'm not necessarily saying that you need, extroverts to learn a foreign language, but someone who has the confidence to make mistakes is always going to learn much more quickly than someone who is afraid to experiment. Intelligence isn't a factor, I feel, in language learning. I would prefer to use the term learning skills. Learning skills are those abilities which make one person progress at a much faster speed than the others. They include having a good ear, efficient revision, being able to monitor your own speech, suitable organization of learning generally. However, if we go back to our starting point, which was the much greater number of speakers of languages who have learned outside classrooms, I think it gives us the key to what I believe is the most important factor, and that's independence. A learner who frees him or herself from the tyranny of the teacher and the classroom, and who makes use of 24 hours a day for learning, who, in a word, accepts responsibility for learning, is always going to be not just a good language learner, but the best. Conversely, someone who won't accept this responsibility is always going to remain at what we call a plateau. They fail to make progress and blame their teachers. In reality, it is themselves that they should blame.
B. Now try this. Listen to a more authentic version of the presentation. Supply the missing words while listening.
The topic I'd like to deal with this morning is what makes a good language learner. This is an eternal problem and one to which there's no real solution. I would, however, like you to think about the situation of learners outside the classroom, because in many ways it would be true to say that there are more people in the world who speak a foreign language or a second language who didn't learn it in a classroom than there are who did. And I think this awareness of the success of out-of-classroom learning provides us with a key to how in-classroom learning can be successful. Let us look then at the characteristics of a good language learner. I think motivation is certainly going to be very high on our list. Obviously, there are different kinds of motivation. There is what we call instrumental motivation. This is the kind of motivation which, in theory, persuades a school pupil to learn a language in order to pass an examination. It's external motivation, something which is imposed on the learner. The opposite of this is integrative motivation, the kind of motivation which gets an immigrant in a country or someone who's married to a speaker of another language to master the tongue much more rapidly than someone learning in a classroom. Arguably, most people possess mixed motivation, although it would appear from research that integrative motivation does give much better results, certainly as far as speed of learning goes. Personality is obviously another major factor to be borne in mind. I'm not necessarily saying that you need, extroverts to learn a foreign language, but someone who has the confidence to make mistakes is always going to learn much more quickly than someone who is afraid to experiment. Intelligence isn't a factor, I feel, in language learning. I would prefer to use the term learning skills. Learning skills are those abilities which make one person progress at a much faster speed than the others. They include having a good ear, efficient revision, being able to monitor your own speech, suitable organization of learning generally. However, if we go back to our starting point, which was the much greater number of speakers of languages who learned outside classrooms, I think it gives us the key to what I believe is the most important factor, and that's independence. A learner who frees him or herself from the tyranny of the teacher and the classroom, and who makes use of 24 hours a day for learning, who, in a word, accepts responsibility for learning, is always going to be not just a good language learner, but the best. Conversely, someone who won't accept this responsibility is always going to remain at what we call a plateau. They've failed to make progress and blame their teachers. In reality, it is themselves that they should blame.
Part 3. Foreign accents. A. You are going to hear the first section of a passage by Sidney Rudgeon, a tourist guide, on his attitude to the way foreigners speak English. While listening for the first time, focus on the key words. Add more keywords, if you can, in the left-hand column. After the second listening, complete the summary in the right-hand column with the help of the notes.
As far as I'm concerned, I do tend to judge people I meet by their accents. I don't mean that I'm a sort of snob and only like people with posh accents, but I never feel comfortable with a new person until I've been able to place them from the way they speak. If it's an English person, I feel much more at ease if I can say, "Ah, he comes from Liverpool," or "He's probably been to public school." I suppose then I know what to talk about and what to expect from the other person. The same is true of foreigners. Personally, I prefer a foreigner to speak with a recognizable foreign accent so that I know that I'm talking to a Frenchman, a Guianian, a Pole, and so on. So for me, it seems a bit pointless for foreigners to try desperately hard to get rid of their national accent and try to speak BBC English. If someone is clearly French, I know there's no point in talking about cricket or making jokes about the Irish. And frankly, I think it even sounds more attractive. I can't really explain why, but if a person has a foreign accent, they seem to be more interesting, even if they are saying the most ordinary things.
B. You are going to hear the second section of the passage by Sidney Rudgeon, a tourist guide, on his attitude to the way foreigners speak English. While listening for the first time, focus on the key words, add more keywords if you can, in the left-hand column. After the second listening, complete the summary in the right-hand column with the help of the notes.
Mind you, there is a limit to intelligibility. If the accent is so strong that you have a struggle to understand what they are saying, then that gets in the way of the conversation, and the flow is broken while you try to sort out the sounds into meaningful bits. I don't mean an accent as strong as that. I'm talking about the kind of accent where you can tell immediately which country the person comes from. But where they've got enough English to carry on a good conversation without searching for words or messing up the grammar so that you lose the thread. I suppose it's the kind of accent most foreigners have, really. To be honest, it's only a very few who have such a good ear that they produce more or less genuine British English, and even then it can be quite amusing because they may have picked up a clearly regional accent or even a very upper class accent which doesn't fit in with their character at all. But most foreigners who learn English are desperately keen to get rid of their foreign accents and waste a lot of time trying to do so.
Part 4. More about the topic, how to enlarge your vocabulary. Three students of English are discussing how they try to learn new vocabulary. Listen to the conversation and tick what way each student uses.
I learn a lot of new words by reading newspapers. I look up each new word in my dictionary.
Yes, I like reading newspaper too, but I don't use a dictionary. I can usually guess the meaning of new words. I also read sports magazines because I'm interested in sport and I can guess what the words mean.
It's different for me. I learn new words from TV and films. I try to figure out the words from the pronunciation. Then I look them up in the dictionary or ask my husband to explain.
You're lucky. I haven't got an American husband. I think the biggest problem is remembering new words. I know I should keep a vocabulary book, but I'm too lazy, so I don't.
Well, I keep vocabulary cards and I write each word with its translation.
Oh, I think it's better to write the word in an English sentence. That's what I do in my vocabulary book. And sometimes I group together all the words related to one topic, such as football or camping.
That's a good idea. I used to try and learn 10 words each day, but that didn't work.
No, it didn't work for me either. You can't remember the words if you don't use them. I do a lot of crossword puzzles, and that helps me.
I try and use new words when I talk to people or write to them.
Part 5. Do you know? A. The following words and phrases will appear in this part. Listen carefully and study the definitions.
1. Punch. 2. Franglais. 3. Franglais column. 4. Adoption. 5. The war. 6. The box.
B. The following is a casual but slightly academic conversation about some adaptations of English into French or vice versa. Listen carefully to complete the chart.
Hello, Carol. Is that you?
Alex, what on earth are you doing? A stupid question. You're doing the same as I am.
What are you laughing at?
Well, actually, I'm just reading this article in Punch. It's the Franglais column. It's very funny.
Oh, yes, yes.
I know this is only a spoof, but I think these adaptations of English into French or French into English can be very funny. How does it occur, actually?
Oh, I suppose it came after the war. You know, when the Americans were in France and a lot of English words and expressions came into French.
Oh, I see. Yes. So?
But after that, there was a strong reaction against it, I think.
You mean people aren't very keen on it? A sort of linguistic imperialism.
Exactly, yes. Take the example like lift, you see. We've got no word in French for lift.
You mean lift? The thing that goes up and down?
No. I mean, would you like a lift home? Or something like that. Would you like a lift? What would you say in French? You would say something like, can I take you home with my car?
Oh, I see. So?
It's so much easier to say, would you like a lift, you see?
I see. So, in fact, it's often for words that there's no equivalent for in...
Yes, that. That's it, yes.
In French?
Yes.
Or something. I suppose the same would apply to something like, le week-end.
Yes, yes. That goes back a bit, yes. I suppose it was something, before the First World War.
Oh, that one's really old. Are there any more recent examples?
Yes. Speakerine. Is a good example.
Speakerine?
Speakerine, yes.
That doesn't even sound French. That sounds more German.
Yes, it's a bit of a monster, actually. You know, it means an announcer or a newsreader.
Oh, I see. On the box.
Yes.
And there are other things, aren't there, that are distortions like that? What's the one I can... Le smoking.
Ah, le smoking, yes.
which means dinner jacket in English.
And we say smoking in French. It's very strange, in fact. But you've got another one, the training. The training, and you...
What's that?
Oh, it's like a pajama in French. And you will say, I don't know,
The pajama?
Children, it's getting late. Put your training on and go to bed.
How peculiar. Because, I mean, training means something quite different. Are there any other reasons why we borrow, why the French borrow words? Borrow English words?
Snob value, I suppose.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
You mean English words are snobbish in French?
Yes. They would take a word like building and think it's much better to live in a building than to live in a house.
How strange. Because building is such...
So we say building... We are living in the building.
It's such a mundane word in English. I mean, it sounds just so ordinary.
Yes, it is.
But surely, I mean, something like le parking, which is very common, that can't have snob value, can it?
No, of course. I mean, just the French is cumbersome.
Mrs. Harding, could you go through now, please?
Oh, dear. I've got to go.
Bye-bye, Carol.
I hope it's not too painful, Alex. Thanks. Bye.
C. Now try this. Listen to a more authentic version of the conversation.
Hello, Carol. Is that you?
Alex, what on earth are you doing here? Stupid question. You're doing the same as I am.
What are you laughing at?
Well, actually, I'm just reading this article in Punch. It's the Tremblay column. It's very funny.
Oh, yes.
I know this is only a spoof, but I think these adaptions of English into French or French into English can be very funny. How did it occur to you?
Oh, I suppose it came after the war, you know, when the Americans were in France and a lot of English words and expression came into French.
I see, yes.
But after that, there was a strong reaction against it, I think.
You mean people aren't very keen on it? It's sort of linguistic imperialism.
Exactly, yes. Take the example like lift, you see. We got no word in French for lift.
You mean lift, the thing that goes...
No. I mean, would you like a lift home or something like that? Would you like a lift? What would you say in French? You would say something like... Can I take you home with my car?
Oh, I see.
So it's almost easier to say, would you like a lift, do you see?
I see. So, in fact, it's often for words that there is no equivalent
for
in
French. Yes,
that's
it.
Or something, I suppose the same would apply to something like le weekend.
Yes, that goes back a bit, yes. I suppose it was something... Even before the First World War.
Oh, that one's really old. Are there any more recent examples?
Yes, speakerine is a good example.
Speakerine,
yeah.
That doesn't even sound French, that sounds
yes,
very German.
Yes, it's a bit of a monster, actually. You know, it means an announcer or a newsreader.
Oh, I see, on the box.
Yes.
Ah. And there are other things, aren't there, that are distortions like that. What's the one I can... le smoking.
Ah, le smoking,
which
yes.
Which means dinner jacket in English.
And we say smoking in French. It's very strange, in fact. But you got another one, the training, the training, and you.
What's that?
Oh, it's like a pyjama in French, and you will say, I don't know.
The pyjama.
Children, it's getting late. Put your training on and go to bed.
How peculiar! Because I mean, training means something quite different. Are there any other reasons why the French borrow English words?
A snob value, I suppose.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
You mean English words are snobbish? In French?
Yes, they would take a word like building and think it's much better to live in a building than to live in a house.
house stones
so
of
they
building.
So they would say building, we are living in the building.
It's such a mundane word in English. I mean, it sounds just so ordinary. But surely, I mean, something like le parking, which is very common, that can't have snob value, can it?
No, of course. I mean, just the French is cumbersome.
Mrs. Harding, could you go through now, please?
Oh, dear, I've got to go.
Oh, bye-bye, Carol.
It's not too painful, Alex. Bye.